Well, good morning, everybody. Hope you're having a fantastic Wednesday morning, and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, episode 132. I am your host, Coleman, and I am joined by co-host Bob Van Kirk. Good morning, Bob. Good morning, Bob. Sorry, I can't speak. How was your evening last night?
Good morning, Coleman. Good morning, everybody. I had a great evening, met up with some Bitcoiners and also got to hear a little bit of the presidential address. So, good evening overall. I apologize for any background noise. I'm in my vehicle this morning.
All good. You got a little echo, but it's nothing too crazy. So I did watch the president's speech or address to Congress last night. I think there's a lot of takeaways from that. We'll hit on some of those this morning. I think the country is still extremely divided, and we'll get into that. And it's just really sad. I think President Trump called it out very early in the address. And in case you missed it, I'll just kind of paraphrase, but he spoke directly to the Democrat Party, and he said, "It doesn't matter what I say, it doesn't matter what I do, they will never cheer or clap or applaud me for anything that I do." And he gave examples. I could cure cancer, I could do this, I could do that, and it wouldn't matter. And it was pretty evident when they had some of the special guests being addressed and shown, and the left, the Democrats, just refused to stand up or applaud or do anything like that. It was really disgusting, especially when it came to the 13-year-old boy from Houston who had brain cancer. And he was made an honorary Secret Service agent, which I think was a pretty cool move by President Trump to do. This boy's dream was to become a police officer, and he was awarded that. You could tell the boy was emotional. He gave the Secret Service agent a hug. It was a really moving moment, and they still panned over to the right side of the house, or the Democrat side, and they were all just sitting down, completely unfazed. Omar, Bob, if you guys want to talk about it, I'm going to address something after you guys give your thoughts. It's something I'm a little hesitant to address, but I'm going to go ahead and address it after. But if you guys want to speak on that, I'd like to hear it.
I thought I honestly did not enjoy his speech at all. It was just so long. Like, he needs an editor, like, really badly. Maybe it's 'cause I guess it might be good if, like, you're unplugged from politics, like, if you don't follow politics at all. Like, if that was all new stuff, then okay, yeah, probably good for you. But if you follow politics even, like, a bit, you should already know every single thing that he said. There was nothing new there, which is what I was kind of hoping for. I did think that, like, they always do, like, some sort of gestures and stuff like that. And the one you mentioned with the kid, I thought was, like, really cool. Just especially, like, it was cute seeing him, like, hug the Secret Service officer and stuff like that, So it was nice to see. And, to your point, like, to make that political is just petty. Like, cheer for the kid. It's not cheering for Trump. Like, that's, that would be, like, the decent thing to do. But, that's not partisan politics. Partisan politics from both sides really is, it just brings out the worst in people. And that's kind of, you look back to, Washington's mornings, that's the reason he was against, parties. He didn't want, it to be, us to be divided, us versus them. It's a whole nother topic. The main gist from Trump's, State of the Union, there wasn't really new information. If you've been tracking politics for the past couple months, nothing new there for you. But it was really long-winded. I feel like almost intentionally he wanted to beat Clinton's hour and 27-minute record, because it was, like, mentioned a few times leading up to it, and then he went ahead and beat it with, like, an hour and 43 minutes or something like that. Definitely could have been trimmed down. Like, he literally was like, he went age by age for the Social Security, like, the database. Like, there's this many in this age group, this many in this age group, this many in this age group. Like, I don't think we needed that level of detail. Like, he could have skipped over that. Anybody, like, doing a presentation would have definitely been told to, like, eliminate that or, like, bring a chart to show.
I think, though, the reason he went into such detail is because they're not covering that on certain media outlets. And so I do think that this was the first time a lot of people, if they listened to it, heard that information. I didn't mean to cut you off, Yomar, but I think that's why he was going through, or that's my reasoning for it. I really don't think a lot of the left-leaning mainstream medias cover all of that. And again, they're just their names on the Social Security Administration. We really don't have, they haven't shown any evidence that those people are collecting payments. I think it's just kind of a talking point at this stage, but I don't think people knew how many people are out there. So continue, Omar. I didn't mean to really cut you off.
Yeah, no worries. And I agree. I can understand like the reasoning for it. I just don't think it makes for, I don't think most people survive to the end of that. Hour and 43 minute speech. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people, like, I was getting tired and I wanted to go to sleep and I stayed up late and it screwed up my whole morning. So now when I have a non-speaking meeting later, I'm just gonna have my camera off and go down to the gym. But like, usually I try to do that in the morning. So I'm all off today and I'm tired. And it's because Trump talked for too long. So maybe I'm a little bit bitter because of that. But yeah, and that's the other thing too. Like, it is, I think, a bit of a talking point. Like, just because they're in the database, like there's in most databases you look at, there'll always be like some test things that just have like absurd dates attached to them. You know, like, you'll work for a company that was founded 5 years ago and there's a sale from, you know, January 1st, 1900. And it's just cause like it's outside of the scope of anything. It's not going to show up in anything that you're actually looking for. And you keep it there, as like a test and stuff like that. So if they do find evidence that like there's actually payments going to some of these things, I feel like that's, a different story. But I, to your point, I haven't seen that exactly. So I just wish that I could have went to bed on time or at least gotten some new information for staying up late.
Yeah. Those late nights are rough on school nights. It's tough, especially if you're on the East Coast. Went to about 11:15 at night, so it always makes it rough. Bob or Infra, do you have any takeaways from the speech?
I'll just say I don't disagree with you, Omar. I think the level of detail was a little obnoxious, but you know, to your point, Coleman, I agree. You know, if the media was doing their job, then maybe he wouldn't have felt the need to do that. And then I also just wanted to make a comment that I do feel like the stories of the individuals, was the highlight. And then maybe just, you know, as I think about it afterwards and what I've seen this morning, really I'm enjoying the, memes of the, way people have changed the signs that the Democrats were holding up, during the speech, in their act of defiance. And so I'm enjoying seeing the creativity and humor put on those signs now by the memesters out there.
Yeah, people are pretty. Oh, go ahead, Infra.
Oh no, yeah, I was just gonna say, like, I'm far from the biggest Trump fan, Trump sycophant or a partisan. Ironically, I'd call myself a 2003 Democrat. Anti-war, pro-free speech, kind of anti-multinational conglomerates, right? Like, but that's, I guess, a different, discussion. But yeah, no, like I thought it was good. You know, I'm critical of Trump when I think he deserves it. But I think it was good to lay out the wasteful, like when he was going into the wasteful spending, I think it was good to, I think he needs to do that more. And just be relentless, factual, detail oriented about just exactly what they are, the Uniparty had been spending, you know, my money on, you know, the average American's tax dollars on. I think he needs to do more of that. And I didn't finish the whole thing. I'm on the West Coast, I wake up at 3:30. So I fell asleep. I couldn't even stay awake for the entire part, but I think I did catch like 85%. I thought it was good. You know, there were some annoying parts. Trump, I think the problem with Trump is that he opens himself up to a lot of criticism by people that take him too literally. I think he could do away with some of the exaggeration or hyperbole or figures of speech. You know, everyone is saying those kinds of things, you know, like, well, it's the best ever. It's like, well, no, it's just not. And the opposition will use those statements to, oh, see, and we're going to deconstruct it and show how this is actually a lie and Trump is a liar. It's like, you know, they're missing the forest for the trees. But like, you know, I think what I'm worried about is how everyday Americans are going to, I think, you know, we saw in the last election that independents are now the biggest voting bloc. Bigger than Republicans, bigger than Democrats. Sure, Trump, you know, gained a lot of independents, but as a voting bloc, independents are the largest voting bloc. And so like I feel like that independent vote, that pendulum can swing very quickly. You know, they came over the fence for Trump, but like I'm kind of starting to worry about the messaging and the PR behind some of the things that I fully support: cutting spending, balancing the budget, you know, cutting waste, fraud, and abuse, ending wars, all these different things that I support, rebalancing the economy, and kind of restructuring it to more, to, you know, fair, more kind of, productive sort of structure. But like, you know, the reality is that and I was talking about this, you know, in November when, you know, right after the election, like he inherited a pretty difficult situation. And so like what I said back then was like, guys, 2025 is going to be volatile. That was like the one prediction that I had. And you know, we see GDP now is, you know, -2.5 or something percent, GDP contraction in quarter one, estimate, you know, it's not final yet, but that's the estimate. And you know, the S&P is selling off and you have CNN, right? Like I torture myself on purpose watching CNN. The past couple nights, it's like the market is tanking, you know, market bloodbath. And it's like, you look at S&P is down like 1.5%, you know, like it's 3.5-4% away from the highs, you know. But so that's why I think, you know, PR and messaging, like they need to be better. I do really think that Americans are like, he mentioned the pain and a lot of people are talking about that kind of comment. I think that like Americans are willing to tolerate some pain. But I think it needs to be messaged correctly and the PR needs to kind of be better. And you know, I mean, I think if Americans understood what the real root of kind of all the economic and therefore, you know, societal sort of problems is, then I think, you know, the first step should be education, to educate American, you know, voters on what is actually wrong with, you know, why are things the way they are. Then they can start messaging, okay, well, like, in order to fix that, it's gonna take some pain but, you know, a couple years down the line, we're gonna have a real economy that's actually net productive. And on and on, you know, so I think they have to like just do better with like PR and education, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think one thing a couple things I want to touch on. One thing was like in terms of, you mentioned, Bob mentioned the signs that the Democrats are holding and like the interruptions and stuff. What frustrates me is like, they'll do that for Trump, but like when Netanyahu, like a foreign leader's there, all of them are on their feet cheering, which is fucking absurd. Like, I don't care if like you're a big Israel supporter or not, but like, if you're going to, you know, you won't, interrupt that guy who is, you know, on trial for war crimes and all sorts of things.
Or Zelensky, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, they'll wave a foreign flag in there, but they won't fucking, stay silent for Trump, who's like it or not, the president of the United States. That should infuriate you. And it should show you like who they're really, loyal to, right? And like that should be, you know, for me it's top of mind, but you know, that's me. But for you, it should at least be on your radar, like, hey, why is this? Which brings me to the other thing that I thought was pretty interesting and, you know, gives me a little bit of hope for the future. Trump did not mention Israel very much. You know, he mentioned it a couple times but offhand, and I don't think it's because he's, you know, turning on Israel or anything like that. I think it's just reflecting the fact that it's unpopular. you know, and that's, you know, and for you were talking about the independents or amongst independents, it's fairly unpopular and very unpopular with Democrats. And I think I was watching Breaking Points, their coverage of it. And they were saying that Trump's Gaza plan, like across the board, had like 17% approval rating. And again, that goes to like the messaging. I think that Trump's like quote Gaza plan is just, him trying to get, the Arab nations to come up with a way that they pay for it instead of the US and Israel paying for it. And I wrote, an article, you know, breaking that down. And today actually Egypt came up with a plan that supposedly Trump rejected already. But again, his plan, like his so-called Gaza plan is so devoid from reality that, I don't think it's realistic. And I don't think it's a real proposal, I should say. And then there was something else I wanted to cover. Like for the Democrats, like planning wise, I'm hoping that this will shift them back to your, like more towards your 2003 Democrat there, infra. Because that seems to be like the most popular aspects of Trump, is the anti-war, deep state. Like those are the things that are resonating across political boundaries. And then, you know, if they want to hash out, you know, Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and all that sort of stuff, you know, I think that would be better. But I'm hoping that we kind of start to see a base of, you know, non-interventionalism come back to the country, because that's really what we need in terms of fixing it. I think it's going to be hard for us to educate the American people because, A, our education system sucks, and B, it's like it's a little bit of a dangerous tightrope to walk on. To let everybody, like, let the cat out of the bag while still trying to, you know, utilize it. So we'll see how that fares.
Infra, I'm going to throw it back over to you. You've made some interesting posts about what's kind of going on right now in the markets, the dollar and kind of the direction this administration wants to go. Do you mind kind of covering that and letting kind of the listeners know, what to expect? Because I think a lot of people, if they take a look at things, it's been pretty chaotic over the last couple of weeks. And so if you can just give us a little guidance as to what you think they're trying to accomplish, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah. So, you know, just to preface this, this is just kind of my opinion. I'm just a, you know, autistic guy in his sweatpants that nerds out on this stuff. but the way I see it is like, you know, one of the roots of the problem that has led to the suicide rate being the highest since the Great Depression, drug overdose deaths, you know, over 100,000 per year, leading cause of death for young men, you know, political polarization, all these things that we know are deeply wrong about the country, the fiscal deficit, right, the debt and deficit, all these things kind of come back to the structure of the international system, and the dollar being the center, you know, at the center of that as the reserve. So like in the 50s, following World War II, you know, Europe was decimated. We were largely unscathed. We kind of came out very strong. Everyone wanted, you know, we had good growth. We rebuilt Europe. Our manufacturing capacity was great. We were exporters to the rest of the world on a net basis. Our dollar was very strong and people wanted the dollar. And so through the kind of 60s and 70s, we went around the world propagating the dollar, getting, you know, households, but mainly businesses and kind of central banks, institutions to adopt the dollar. And not only did they adopt, hold, like, you know, dollars, but they also started writing loans to each other and creating dollars. This is the euro dollar system. When a bank in Germany wants to extend a line of credit to, you know, a business in Germany, and it's a dollar-backed, you know, a dollar line of credit, they just write that loan, and the dollars are created out of thin air, similar to how it works here in America. So not only did the rest of the world want to hold actual dollars, but they were starting to extend dollar credits to each other, meaning that there was now a dollar liability. So what this did is it essentially put a floor in demand for the dollar. The demand for the dollar could only go so low. You know, we basically got the rest of the world strung out on dollars. And, you know, we've been able to use that as a weapon to tank and crash entire economies through sanctions and various mechanisms through the Treasury. And so, you know, the national security state, the kind of uniparty deep state group of people have loved the dollar being the reserve currency of the world and this kind of addiction that the rest of the world has on dollars. And what this has caused is a strengthening of the dollar as that the rest of the world is kind of constantly in demand to buy dollars, basically sell their native currency to buy dollars, puts upward pressure on the price of the dollar. And I would argue DXY, if people are familiar with that measure, is actually not really the best measure. The trade weighted dollar is much more representative of the actual strength of the dollar. If you look at the trade weighted dollar, it is just up and to the right. DXY has some kind of dips, you know, but like the real trade weighted dollar index is just up and to the right relentlessly. And so in kind of international finance, a strengthening dollar makes our exports less and less competitive. The opposite is true too. You know, weakening currency makes say you're GM and you're making cars here in the Rust Belt. A weakening dollar actually helps you because it makes your cars more affordable, relatively speaking, for the rest of the world. If the dollar is weakening, and their currency is strengthening, it makes, you know, U.S. Products, you know, cheaper for them on a relative basis. And, you know, but what we've seen is that the dollar has just gotten stronger and stronger and stronger. And this is due to kind of the structure of the system, this dollar reserve system. And so this ever increasing dollar, has disconnected on, you know, in international finance and macroeconomics, there are ways to value currencies. And, you know, basically to put it very simply, like think of it as a Bitcoiner, you know, if you're producing more value than you're consuming, right? If you are producing more value for the world than you are consuming, you are, you know, in a strong economic position. It's really quite similar with the way it should work, where, you know, if you're exporting far more than you're importing, your economy is in a stronger position. Therefore, your currency should strengthen because, you are, you know, back in the day, gold would be flowing into your country. If you are just like a Bitcoiner, if you're producing more value than you're consuming, gold will, you know, Bitcoin will flow in. If you're consuming more than you're producing, gold or Bitcoin would flow out. And so this is the way it should work. But because of the dollar reserve system, that mechanism, has broken. I mean, we here in America run a fiscal deficit and a trade deficit. And so the dollar should be much, much, much weaker. Like if you're familiar with DXY, it's at 106. It should be at like 30 or 40 or 50, much, much, much weaker, because we in America are consuming way more value than we are producing. Our trade deficit blew out to another all-time low, and we know about the fiscal deficit is utterly insane. The dollar should be much weaker, in a normal system, that makes our exports competitive again, right? Like the dollar gets weak enough that at a certain point, U.S. exports become the kind of cheapest thing for the rest of the world. They buy all of our stuff and boom, that's gold or Bitcoin flowing into our country. And so there's kind of this like all, you know, constant fluid, release valve, that should be there that adjusts for, you know, sometimes a country will go through tough economic times, their currency will fall, which allows everything to recalibrate, you know, makes their exports more and more competitive. Eventually, you know, the rest of the world starts buying. And so there are these kind of natural release valves that should be there. But because of the way the dollar reserve system is structured, they're broken. The dollar just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. No matter how bad our fiscal or our trade deficit gets, the dollar just gets stronger and stronger. And as it does that, our exports become less and less and less competitive, just making the situation even worse. I know that Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, and Moran, who is the Council of Economic Advisors chair, I know that they understand this. They're both big, you know, macro guys, very bright. I think they understand this. J.D. Vance also understands this, that the dollar's reserve status is the problem. It is what's causing all these problems. J.D. Vance actually pressured Jerome Powell in the Senate and, like, you know, interrogated him about how the dollar being the reserve currency is such a bad thing. It's mind blowing to watch because he's like the only politician that's ever done that that understands this. So I think that, you know, there's enough people around Trump that understand that the kind of everything is broken and skewed and not fair. And this is before we even get into other countries like China that, you know, their currency is completely manipulated. Their currency, like how I was just talking about, they run this huge trade surplus and they have for a couple decades. Their currency should be getting stronger, right? Because they're producing more value for the rest of the world. You know, value flows into their country. Their economic position gets stronger. Currency gets stronger. That's what should have been happening. But China has been doing the opposite. And in fact, the yuan has been weakening. So everything is just kind of broken. Like the normal mechanisms that should adjust for all these kind of imbalances are all broken. You know, China's a communist country, managed currency, you could say manipulated currency, you know, dollar reserve issue, all these things. So I think the solution is a shift towards gold or Bitcoin or something that is neutral, that can kind of float around in all different currencies to allow that release valve to start working again. Not just for America, but for China. Like China needs to be reorienting their economy away from this kind of insanely export driven, just dumping products on the rest of the world. They need to recalibrate theirs to be more consumption based. We need to be less consumption based, right? Like it wouldn't just help America to do this. It would be globally one of the best, things in my opinion that we could do for everyone in the world. And I think that they recognize that. And so the way you go about that, the way, you know, people have told me, oh, well, but they can't just decide to end the reserve currency or, you know, they can't just unilaterally decide. They absolutely can. As an example, you know, a bunch of foreigners hold treasuries. This is a dollar denominated asset and they hold it. If we said, hey, instead of paying you 4%, you know, or whatever the rate on their treasury, we're going to tax that interest. We're no longer going to be paying over $1 trillion of, you know, of our country's, you know, wealth, our youth's, future. We're not going to be doing that anymore to foreigners. We're going to tax any interest at 50%, 60%, 70%. I don't even think it would take that much. I think even 20 or 30 would work. It becomes much less appealing for a foreigner to hold a treasury. And so there are mechanisms that they could go after. But I think that the likelihood is, that we are shifting away from the dollar system. And that's what the Greenland and the Canada talk, right? They have all these resources. So kind of going back to what I was just saying, they have all these resources and can export value, to the rest of the world. So if you knew that you were going to be moving away from this kind of old system and towards a more fair system, where things, the release valves are not all broken, you know that the dollar would be super, super, super weak, which is good for reindustrializing, but it'd be very inflationary. So if you want to try to soften that blow where the DX, you don't just wake up one day and the DXY is, you know, 50, 60% weaker. If you were to, you know, try to soften that blow, you would want to bring in to say a economic bloc like like Europe has, create an economic bloc, with countries that have a bunch of, you know, that have the capacity to export a ton of value, to the rest of the world. And Greenland and Canada both fit that criteria. And so they would kind of soften the blow. If I'm right that this is kind of a gradual or concerted shift away from the dollar, the Greenland and Canada talk that Trump's been doing makes perfect sense. And I think really it's the only kind of logical explanation. Yeah, I've heard people say it's for defense purposes, but I think like the more logical explanation is that they realize that this is the direction we have to go. Otherwise, the suicide rate will just continue ever higher. More young men will overdose on fentanyl and right on and on and on. And so I that's just my kind of take. It's kind of a complicated, it's a pretty complicated thing. So I'm sorry if it's like, confusing or, I hope I did a good job explaining it, but yeah, it's just my opinion. It's kind of the, how I'm reading through it. It'll, you know, we'll kind of know for sure as time goes on, you know, like if I'm right, I think that there will be points that will come out, you know, points of evidence, to point to and go, oh, okay, yeah, you know, that's what they're doing. So I think, you know, just kind of filed away and something to keep in mind, and we'll kind of see if it ends up, proving right.
Sorry, I was just going to say I have a slightly different take on the Greenland stuff. Like, I think it is partially the resources, but if you look at it in comparison, like, so, with Panama, like we had, you know, like certain like rights and everything with the agreement there, and we just kind of let it flounder and die off. And that's how China was able to come in and do investments and all that stuff and kind of start taking, like, quote, taking over, Panama. So what I see with Greenland, like a lot of people don't realize, like Greenland's also, at least entertaining the idea of independence from Denmark. So I think what a lot of that is just asserting that, you know, I posted up to the Nest where I break this down in more detail, but like the Trump doctrine to me seems, you know, focusing more on the Western Hemisphere, you know, withdrawing from, a lot of these, alliances like the NATO. Like we keep seeing him talk about like the literal ocean between us and Europe and how like that makes our, interests, divide, you know, like for Poland, it makes obvious sense why they support Ukraine, but for us, what sense does it make, you know? And then with Greenland, if they, you know, seek independence, or if we, you know, withdraw from NATO, or, you know, NATO gets, defanged or whatever, you know, we want to assert our dominance over Greenland. Like your interest is not in Europe. Your interest is with us because you're in the Western Hemisphere. And part of that is the mining and stuff like that. We want to make sure it's American companies getting in there and not European or Chinese ones. We want to, you know, exert our influence over that nation because it's close to us. Now, if he actually wants statehood, I don't know. I don't think it matters. I think he's just asserting like you are, your interests are aligned with us, nobody else. I think it's kind of the same with Canada. I don't think the move for a Canadian state is real just because of the wrench it would throw in, electoral, dynamics. Like I think largely lean further left. They'd be the largest state, and I think it would just rob Republicans of a lot of power, and they just won't go for it. So that's kind of my things. I do think that you are right, though, in terms of preparing for the twilight of the dollar. I think that's a lot of the Bitcoin reserve, securing minerals and, you know, other commodities makes sense with that. So to your point, it's hard to really say because he does, we mentioned it earlier, the hyperbole that he speaks with, it makes it hard to really pin down what he means.
Infra, are you still up here? I'm showing that you dropped down.
Yeah. I would just say real quick to that, like the Bitcoin reserve thing, ironically, that would actually strengthen the dollar. Maybe, you know, say we print $1 trillion today. Yeah, in the short term, the dollar would fall, you know, but we know that Bitcoin goes up and to the right over enough time. So like what you would end up getting after a couple of years is actually the dollar gets stronger. Which is like the exact opposite of what we want. So just from a kind of macro, standpoint, it actually makes more sense for them to, accumulate foreign exchange reserves, you know, foreign currencies. And Bessent, you know, he was a currency trader, some of the best, biggest currency trades of all time. He understands kind of, you know, how that game works. But you know, for example, we print debt, you know, issue debt. Get dollars, sell those dollars and buy yuan, right? If we think the yuan is undervalued, which it is, then that would put, you know, pressure upward on the yuan. So if that's their goal, I think the Bitcoin reserve is kind of like not the best way to go about it. What we really want, because think about it this way, say you're China, and say, you know, the US has 1 million Bitcoin. Well, China, you know, runs this huge trade surplus against America. So, you know, we import a ton of stuff from China. So China, all it would take is China goes, oh, okay, you know, you're buying $1 trillion worth of our stuff. We don't accept dollars anymore. We want your Bitcoin. This is why, you know, and because we are a net consumer, Bitcoin would flow out of the country. So it doesn't really fix the kind of root of the problem. And so that would be the only point I would say is like, you know, if we printed money to buy Bitcoin or gold, all it would take is any country that runs a surplus against us to say, okay, cool. Glad you have all this Bitcoin now. We want that. We don't want your dollars. And what are we going to say? We have to say yes. And until we restructure our economy to stop running these insane fiscal and trade deficits, and make our economy productive on a net basis, other countries will have that leverage.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. So thanks.
And for you, it stated that there were certain points or signs you're looking for to see if your thesis will be proven correct. What are you looking for specifically?
I think talk about – I think here's the thing. I think that the biggest kind of goal flashing light on if my theory is correct would be the Mar-a-Lago Accord sort of thing that that I've been talking about for many months now. I would
say. Can you explain what that is? I'm sure there's a lot of listeners who don't.
Yeah. So the first point on it is I think that, not to take a victory lap, but I think that, you know, I was one of like the only people that I, you know, I'm pretty plugged in. I was like one of the only people talking about this in September, October. And now in the macro world, you got like Jim Bianco and Lynn Alden and all these big names talking about it. So I think that that is a positive, like I take that as, it's becoming more likely, right? Like that some of these other much smarter people than me see this as a possibility. I think that that's a positive sign for Mar-a-Lago Accord. So what is a Mar-a-Lago Accord? It would be something like, you basically get America together with, you know, China, Mexico, Canada, Europe, you know, and you get your trade partners all together, and you, come up with a kind of fairer currency system, valuation. So like we've done this, with the Plaza Accord, that was mainly a story about the yen, at the time, right? Like the Japan was skyrocketing, you know, in the global kind of economy. Japan was just on this rapid tear, and they were look, you know, like they were set to take over the world, and their currency was too weak, and the dollar was too strong. So, like Plaza Accord was one. Bretton Woods, you know, these are all kind of what Bessent referred to as a monetary reordering, where you get everyone together and you go, look. Like the system's not fair. Your currency should be X and our currency versus yours should be Y, you know? And the thing with currencies is that like there's so many different cross, rates, right? So like the dollar yen is a different rate clearly than the dollar peso. You know, like each country has a number, you know, valuation against another currency. So there's a gazillion of these like total kind of possibilities or permutations. And the goal of a accord like this is to adjust them, you know, where all countries kind of come out in happy with the result. Because ironically, you know, like countries that manufacture a lot, you know, everyone in America thinks a weak currency or weak dollar is actually this horrible thing, but like, you know, if you're an export, Russia or China or Japan, like they want a weak currency because it makes their exports more and more competitive. And so that, you know, their companies do better and better. They sell more stuff. The country does better. And, you know, clearly in America, because we import basically everything, we don't want a weak currency because it would be inflationary. But, you know, on the other hand, if we don't weaken the dollar, American companies will just not be able to there, you know, American products will just not be competitive. It's just the way it works. And so, yeah, it would be basically kind of the big trading partners, you know, all get together and they say, hey, you know, this currency pair, we want to be X, you know, and everyone kind of comes to an agreement on how they think that kind of, you know, what ends up being fair for everyone. And they're never perfect. But, you know, kind of the, what I would say is a likely outcome would be the yuan is strengthened versus the dollar. Both the yuan and basically all the currencies and all the fiat currencies in the world, we know this, but all the currencies, fiat currencies are need to be devalued versus real assets like gold, Bitcoin, because everyone is in so much debt. So China needs it. Europe needs it. America needs it. All these countries need to devalue their currency versus, you know, real scarce assets. But then you also need to address, you know, currency manipulators like China. I mean, most of the rest of the world kind of does, you know, some currency manipulation. Like America is really the only country that doesn't. And that's why we're the reserve, right? Like everyone, we've told the world, hey, we will not mess with our markets. They just go up and up and up. So you'll make money on the way up in dollars, but then your currency is falling versus the dollar. So you also make money on that part too. So it's a double win. That's called a positive carry. And so we've kind of prided ourselves on being the most open and the most free, capital markets, you know, in an effort to kind of encourage the dollar to be the reserve, you know, asset, or currency for the world. Does that make sense?
Infra, where do, tariffs fit in? Is this just the beginning of the controlled demolition of the dollar and the purchasing power and the value, or where do the tariffs fit in?
Yeah. So tariffs like are, from my point of view, tariffs are good. I support tariffs. I think that they're a good way to start to address kind of imbalances. But they're not enough. Like, you know, until you get that kind of Mar-a-Lago Accord, Plaza Accord 2.0, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, until you get that, you know, that's kind of the real meat of it. Tariffs are good kind of like topping, you know, but like the real meat of it, is kind of a global reordering. And here, you know, I mentioned taxing, you know, really what we need to do is kind of go after, I think the easiest way to go about all this is starting to address the capital and financial account inflows, right? So the rest of the world, we ship out dollars, say to China, they have all these dollars. And so they can, you know, it's kind of wealth, right? That flowed to them. They can decide to buy Nvidia or buy GE corporate bonds or real estate or whatever. And they do. They store some of the dollars as kind of reserves at their central bank. But then they also just kind of recycle a lot of the dollars into US assets. So the kind of quickest, easiest way is not tariffs, but to go after that and say, okay, any kind of foreign country that is putting money back into our assets, we are going to tax that. Or kind of force the world to term out our debt, right? The zero interest, zero coupon, 100-year bond, defense bond thing. That would be another way to do it. No, you know, who wants to put their money in that? Like if you're China, you don't want to put your money in a 0% when you know that the US is printing 8% a year, increasing money supply by 8%, a 0% coupon. On 100 years, like that's basically literally worthless. Like if you mark that to par, you know, mark to market at what that would be actually worth, it's worth like next to nothing. Because in 100 years, at 8% money supply creation each year, like that thing is worthless in like 5 years, you know? And so there's a number of ways to do it, to basically discourage or disincentivize the rest of the world from putting capital into the dollar, but then, dollar assets, cause think about it, if you're in China, and you got dollars, you buy NVIDIA, that NVIDIA is denominated in dollars. So it's a dollar denominated asset, even though it's not the dollar. A lot of people talk about kind of all this stuff and they think when I say the dollar, that I mean like just, currency, just $100 bills. But what I'm really referring to is dollar denominated assets. Anything, real estate, corporate bonds, treasury bonds, equities, anything that's denominated in dollars. And so all they got to do is kind of like target those inflows. And boom, like pretty quickly that'll get the dollar down pretty, pretty significantly. Last thing I would say is we're seeing kind of in the past couple of days, a bit of a rotation of global capital out of America. So, if you'll remember in December, I was talking about the U.S. exceptionalism, right? And money flowing into America and when the dollar is ripping higher. Well, that is reversing, or it's starting to reverse. Like for example, today the DXY is down 1%. Equities are down, well, they're basically flat, but over the past couple of days, stock markets sold off. So there's money flowing out of, America. Yields at the 10-year and the 30-year, last I checked, were actually up. The past 2 days, the 10 and the 30, the yield is up, meaning sell bonds. They're selling bonds, meaning the yield goes up. So people are selling bonds. The equity market's been down, right? Selling pressure on that. And the dollar is down pretty big over the past 3 days. So just kind of lay it out, when you think about it, what that means is that people are selling dollar denominated assets, whether it's S&P, treasury bonds, whatever. Once they get the dollars, right, you sell S&P 500 shares, you have dollars. Well, if you're a European or a Chinese guy, you want your native currency because your mortgage is in that and whatever, it's what you use. So then you sell dollars, right, and buy your local currency. And so this is what is kind of being indicated, is that flywheel that works so great going the other way might be starting to reverse. And I would say that would be the other signpost that I would look for, to see it, if this kind of theory is right, is if we see that continue where capital is rotating out of America, what that would indicate to me is that the rest of the world is kind of worried about what I just said. Like if you're in China or Germany or whatever, and you're worried about what I just said, that we might kind of be less friendly to foreign capital, you would kind of want to get out while everything's still up. And so you would sell S&P or NVIDIA or treasury bonds or whatever. So if we see yields move higher, and the S&P, continue to move lower, and the dollar continue to move lower, that would be another signpost that at least the market is concerned, that this might be happening.
So is that why the gold ticket, or what does he call it? The gold pass, the gold card, $5 million is important, or how do you see that playing into all of this?
Yeah, the gold thing, the gold card thing, I don't have like a strong opinion on. Basically, my understanding of it, I'm not like an immigration expert, but my understanding is that is a, that we basically already have that in the form of I think it's like an EB or EED visa. There's like a two letter sort of visa, and it's basically like a foreign investment. And many countries have this sort of thing. El Salvador has the one Bitcoin, citizenship thing. A program. And so a lot of countries have something like this. I would say it, we are getting foreign direct investment in chip building factories. And there are a lot of these headlines coming out, where foreigners are directly investing in like infrastructure and manufacturing plants and stuff. But the problem is that this stuff takes a long time to play out. You know, that's really, I think, one of the biggest problems is to really restructure, you know, and make America the productive economy that it was in the 50s when we ran a trade surplus. To do that would take many years, you know? And so I think it goes back to kind of my earlier point about people's patience. To really do what's needed, we're talking like years of recession, pretty steep, steep recession and economic pain, much worse than the S&P selling off by 2.5-3%.
Well, thank you for that, Infra. I do want to take this moment to say thank you to our partners, Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use our code BTCVETS for 5% off. Pay with Bitcoin, get an additional 10% off your order, solosatoshi.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Go to punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. And our newest partner, Fountain, podcast and music powered by community. You can support creators directly, send stats directly to the podcaster or artist from your player. Top up your Fountain wallet from any Lightning wallet and boost to send payments with a comment or send a small amount for every minute you spend listening to a specific show. Get paid for listening, for commenting, or for sharing. Listen live, offline, or in the car. Search. Check them out at fountain.com. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th in Juneau. Family-friendly conference. Bring your spouse. Bring the kids. It's going to be an amazing conference. BitcoinAlaska.org. Pre-conference activities take place on the 1st. I do want to take this moment to remind everybody that we do this show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. If you are new to the community, if you're new to our space, go to bitcoinveterans.org, sign up with that connect form, get in touch with us. We have a very large community and we're constantly growing. Our veterans are extremely knowledgeable. We have dozens of private chats that you can be invited to join where we can answer any question from hunting to shooting to Bitcoin mining, or regional chats if you want to sit down and meet others in your area. So please go to bitcoinveterans.org and sign up there. Well, we are at the top of the hour almost, so I do want to start wrapping up the show. There is one thing that I wanted to discuss today that looks like it's starting to gain some traction on X. And it's the crypto summit that is supposed to take place on Friday. So they have a lot of industry leaders like Michael Saylor, Brian Armstrong of Coinbase. They're coming to sit down and talk. And the reason I think that this summit is trending at the moment is for comments that Howard Lutnick, the U.S. Secretary for Commerce, made to the Pavlovic. Today, the news article. And so I'm going to quote it really quick. So just give me one second. Howard Lutnick was quoted stating during this interview that the president definitely thinks that there's a Bitcoin strategic reserve. Now there will be the question of how do we handle the other cryptocurrencies? And I think the model is going to be announced on Friday when we do this summit. A Bitcoin strategic reserve is something the president has been interested in, and he spoke about it during the campaign trail. And I think you're going to see it executed on Friday. So Bitcoin is one thing, and then the other currencies, the other crypto tokens, I think will be treated differently, positively, but differently. End of quote. So I just wanted to spend some time on this. I think that they have to come out on Friday with something of substance. I think they have to come out and actually make a distinguish between the two. And I think it has to be meaningful. I think there's a lot of people that are just getting bored and that a lot of people are losing faith and in Trump's agenda and his plans on what he wants to do, whether he's going to create a Bitcoin strategic reserve, whether he's going to fill it with crap. I do think that this summit on Friday, I don't have a time for it. If I can find a time, I'll throw a link up in the nest. But I do think that there should be some interesting talking points and we should get a little bit more clarity. Now, even though Howard Lutnick says that he's going to announce a strategic Bitcoin reserve and they're going to kind of set out the guidelines, I really don't think that they'll be purchasing any Bitcoin before July, simply because he gave this council 6 months to kind of gather information and do their research. So it wouldn't make sense for them to go ahead and make a purchase. They might just kind of give an outline on how they plan on doing it. And I still believe it has to go through Congress to get approval. I don't think you could do an executive order for this. But Bob or Infra, if you have any thoughts on this, I'd like to go ahead and hear them before we start wrapping up.
Yeah, I think this is another buy the rumor, sell the news event. And so I won't be surprised if a lot of people are disappointed from the outcome. I think you've kind of mentioned some of the things that, the timing issues. And so, from my standpoint, I think this is just another headliner, and maybe we see some good things come out of it going into the summer, but I don't expect anything much. And I could definitely see Bitcoin, revisiting some of the range lows here that we've seen recently on the unmet expectations of a lot of traders.
Infra, do you have anything that you want to say on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a buy the rumor, sell the news. We're kind of in a different regime now where, instead of buying the dip in S&P or, risk assets, instead of buying the dip, you sell the rip. So anytime it pops, people that are long use those as opportunities to get out or to short. And so it's a much different kind of regime to be in. And I think, Bitcoin certainly will have some headwinds due to kind of overall macro, situation.
Interesting. I'm going to take the opposite on what you two stated. I think that there will be some significant news coming out from this meeting. I think they have to. I think people's attention span are pretty short. And I think just, reiterating or just hitting the same talking points again isn't going to fly with the media or with us as Bitcoiners. So I think there will be some substantial news that's being broken during this. If not, then again, as the days go on, I'm losing more and more faith that there will be anything coming out of this administration for a Bitcoin reserve. I do think it should start from the states and work its way up to a national level. But if they don't come through with something on Friday, I really don't have any faith in them. So I'm going to go on the opposite side. I'm going to say that there will be something that's worth listening to on Friday. But we are at the top of the hour, so I'm just going to go back and throw it over to you, Infra and Bob. If you have any final comments or anything you want to get off your chest, now is your time to go ahead and do that. But before you do, Infra, I do want to say thank you for coming up here and speaking. I did learn a lot, and I really enjoy hearing your take. So I want to say thank you from all of us here.
Yeah, of course. Always enjoy it. And if anyone, is interested in this kind of stuff and it's a bit confusing and you want clarification on anything or explanation or anything like that, more than happy, just shoot me a DM and I'll do my best to try to explain it.
Yeah, I'll say thanks, Infra. Thanks everybody for listening. I do like, and I hope everybody appreciates this, that we can have a wide variety of topics that all kind of center themselves around Bitcoin. And so, from yesterday's talking about security and custody and, different topics around that to today, more macro and what things may come. I hope people enjoy the content. We're continually trying to get better, work on having interesting guests and interesting topics. But as always, if you're interested in any of these things or need help, bitcoinveterans.org, go and sign up today so we can get you plugged into where you need to be so that you can be successful on your Bitcoin journey.
Absolutely. Can't say any better than that. So thank you, Bob. Thank you, Infra. And thank you for all of you out there listening to us, for everyone that was in the chat box, everybody who tweeted, and everyone who just had us on in the background to drown out the voices in your head. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to Bob. It means a lot to all the guests we have up here. So tune in tomorrow. I think we might have Joe Colasari joining us to talk a little bit of macro. He's just making sure that his schedule is clear. But that'll be a good one. He went on a space with Dr. Jeff Ross yesterday and talked macro. And so I thought it was really interesting. So I thought it would be, if we could get him in here to talk about some of those points again, it would be great for our listeners. So join us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. But that is all I have for y'all. Thank you again so much for tuning in. I will see you tomorrow. Go out there and have a fantastic day. Just whatever you do, do not shitcoin. It's like trying to grow your social media account on MySpace.